The following program is brought to you by Winthrop University Hospital. It's the weekend. Be good to yourself. It's Katz's Corner with Dr. Aaron Katz, where you can get simple, straightforward answers to your questions about health. From diet and supplements to lifestyle changes. To reach Dr. Katz, call 800-848-WABC. Now, live on 77 WABC, the chairman of urology at Winthrop University Hospital in New York, here is Dr. Aaron Katz.
Good morning, everybody. This is Dr. Scott Schubach. I'm filling in today for Dr. Aaron Katz. I'm a colleague of Dr. Katz, and it's a privilege and an honor to fill in for Dr. Katz, who couldn't be here today. And to the regular listeners who are saying, oh, my God, where's Dr. Katz? Well, I hope I can do justice. As you know, Dr. Katz runs a wonderful radio show, but I've worked with Dr. Katz for over 5 years at Winthrop University Hospital, and I can tell you, as good of a radio host as he is, he's even a better doctor and urologist, and he really does a wonderful job. My role at Winthrop, I am the chairman of the Department of Thoracic and Cardiovascular Surgery. I'm a physician and a surgeon, and I've been at Winthrop for now pushing 26 years. And what a great place to work, and an honor to represent them on today's show. Today's focus, since I am a surgeon of the chest, is going to be what we call cardiothoracic surgery. Cardio meaning heart, thoracic, all the other structures. And we have a wonderful guest, a colleague and a good friend of mine, Dr. Lawrence Speer. Dr. Speer has been doing chest surgery for over 20 years. He trained at the University of Pittsburgh, but grew up locally in the New York area. And he joined us at Winthrop about a year ago. And has specific expertise in surgery of the lung and the esophagus, and also expertise in what we call robotic surgery, which I hope to delve into. So I hope it's going to be a good show. We would love people to call in if you have questions regarding lung surgery, spots on the lungs, nodules, lung cancer, problems with the esophagus, or any general questions about what we call minimally invasive surgery and specifically robotic surgery. A few announcements. As Dr. Katz asked me to discuss a men's health seminar, which will be coming up in Garden City this June. Actually, specifically, it'll be June 17th at the Garden City Hotel in Garden City, Long Island. These go on about once a year. They're wonderful. There's a guest speaker, Dr. Joel Furman, who's a New York Times bestseller and a physician, who speaks about basically total health care, talks about heart disease, diabetes, autoimmune disease, chronic pain syndromes, and the role that diet has in all these maladies. So for information, you can call Winthrop Hospital at 516-663-2316 or online at www.menshealthseminar.com. That's menshealthseminar.com, no space, all one word. And I actually looked at it yesterday, and it is quite the lineup of speakers and topics, and I'm sure it'll be terrific. Our phone number, as stated earlier, is 800-848-WABC, which is 848-9222, and we do appreciate your phone calls and hope we can answer some questions. So first I want to welcome Dr. Lawrence Speer. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you, Scott.
It's great great to have you here. And like I said, I've known Dr. Speer for many years. He has been out with us at Winthrop. And when we talk about cardiothoracic surgery, that involves both surgery of the heart and lung. But as time progresses, the technology has become so specialized that we don't do justice if one surgeon tries to do everything. So Dr. Speer focuses on surgery of the lung, the esophagus, and specifically minimally invasive surgery. So to start off, before we get into surgery, people say one of the things is about screening for spots or tumors or lung cancer. So a common question is, which I'm going to throw out, is patient comes to their doctor and says, I hear about x-rays or CAT scans. I smoked. I didn't smoke. Can you give us some feel of who benefits from what test and who should be screened and who should look for lung nodules?
Well, this is a question that was looked into for several years, and throughout the past several decades, people have been getting chest x-rays by their internists. The problem with chest x-rays is that it's very, very easy to miss small lung nodules and small lesions. So CAT scans, which came about many years ago, are much more accurate in visualizing any type of a lung nodule that's in the chest. There was a huge study that was done several years ago and came to the conclusion that lung masses and lung nodules, which are much easier to be seen with the CAT scan of the chest, can increase the survival of people with early stage lung cancers. So therefore, understanding is that anybody with 30 years pack year history of smoking and are 55 years of age or older should get a screening CAT scan of the chest to look for lung cancer.
So that doesn't imply the 40-year-old, 50-year-old, or 60-year-old says, listen, I never smoked, but I'm really worried about this. I want a CAT scan. What would you tell them?
Well, they wouldn't fit into the study for lung cancer screening, but they're somebody who should be followed up by their medical doctor or their pulmonologist who could further look into their history and see if they're a candidate for some type of a screening program.
Okay, and then you say it's early stage. Can you explain what that means with regard to a lung cancer?
Well, there's four stages of lung cancer. Three of the stages are split into subsegments, but it's stage one, stage two, stage three, and stage four. Stage one is an early stage lung cancer where the cancer is just isolated to the lung and hasn't gone anywhere. The locations that the lung cancer would normally spread to are the adrenal glands that are in the abdomen, your bones, and to the brain. Obviously, lung cancer could spread just about anywhere in the body, but it's most consistently found when it spreads to those three locations.
Keep going.
Okay. Stages two and stages three are when lymph nodes are involved in the chest, and there's about 14 different locations of lymph nodes in the chest. And depending upon which location lung cancer is spread to in those lymph nodes would make you either a stage two or a stage three. And if they've gone nowhere, not to the lymph nodes or outside of the chest cavity, then it would be a stage one. And we consider stage one as an early stage lung cancer.
And I assume that the earlier stage, the better chance of treating or, should I use the word cure?
Absolutely. The vast majority of people with stage one lung cancer are cured. Well above 85% of people.
So the reason to get these screening CAT scans is to try and find it when you can treat it early. Is that the assumption?
Absolutely. The earlier you find a lung cancer, the higher the chance of you being completely cured of the lung cancer.
That's great. And before we get on to how we treat it and the different options, can anybody screen for lung cancer, any internist or any what we call pulmonologist or lung doctor? Are there special centers that are better equipped to do this?
Well, what you want to do is you want to have a low-dose CT scan of the chest. It decreases your radiation exposure, which obviously is an issue long-term. And there are a couple of programs out there. Winthrop has a huge lung cancer screening program. And all you'd have to do is call Winthrop University Hospital to get involved in that study. And right. That is covered by all major insurances. So
yeah, that was my next question.
Yeah, there's no cost to yourself.
Right. That has now been approved where insurance will cover it in the appropriate population. Just a reminder, our phone number, 800-848-WABC. That's 848-9222. Again, we'd love to hear some questions from you. So, Dr. Speer, someone gets a CAT scan, and they say, let's just start with, oh, it's normal, you're clear, you did smoke for 30 years, so keep on smoking, no more tests, or what do you tell that patient?
Well, initially when the study was done, it actually did 3 years, consecutive years of CT scans once a year, and it was felt that after 3 years it could be stopped, but further studies have shown that if you are at risk, which again would be 30 pack year history of smoking and over the age of 55, you should get that annually. You should get an annual CT scan, screening CT scan of the chest to look for any type of a lung cancer that might develop. Yes, obviously it might not be there when you're 55, But there's no reason to think that there's not a possibility of it being there when, let's say, you're 55 or 60 or 65. So it continues throughout your lifetime after the age of 55
right.
once a year.
So just a negative study doesn't imply that you're free and clear.
No.
And I assume you tell people still stop smoking whenever you can, and better yet, don't start smoking.
Of course.
So you get the CAT scan, and your doctor says there's an abnormality. One, of course, everybody's first thought, oh, my God, that's it. I'm finished, which I'm sure is not the case. Does every spot or nodule or growth or tumor, which people sometimes confuse, one thing means something, so the other term means something else, but they're essentially interchangeable, but there's an abnormality on the CAT scan. One, does everything imply cancer? Two, does everything have to come out?
No, just because you have a lung mass does not mean that it's a cancer. There's a significant amount of benign lesions in the lungs that just many people will have. It also doesn't mean that you need surgery. All lung nodules have certain aspects that you look at under the CAT scan to see what they look like, little characteristics. Certain characteristics would tell us by just looking at it that it's going to be a benign lesion. Other ones are suspicious. And other ones are more obvious that they would be a malignancy. The ones that are appear to be benign, that nothing really further needs to be done. If there's something that's suspicious, at that point we would determine whether or not there should be a needle biopsy, some kind of a biopsy, maybe repeat the CAT scan in a few months to see what happens. And then the ones that are more suspicious that we're very concerned about, those would be moved forward towards taking them out or to at least getting a needle biopsy to get a diagnosis.
Right. In patients that I've treated with the nodules of the lung, sometimes it's quite clear this has the characteristics that it should come out. And patients will come and say, well, why do you want to go operate so fast? Why don't you just do what we call a biopsy first, which can be done either with what's called a bronchoscope by a pulmonologist or by a radiologist with what we call a needle biopsy under local anesthesia. Why would you just, and they always say, why are you rushing into surgery? And I don't like that term because we don't rush. It's a well-thought-out decision. But a lot of times we say it's not necessary to get the biopsy. Can you tell our audience why that is? Why wouldn't you do that first?
Well, sometimes you will do that. Sometimes you will get a biopsy prior to doing the surgery or to find out a little bit more information. Sometimes the nodule is in a location where really doing a needle biopsy is almost an impossibility or the risk is too high to doing it. The other issue comes in what kind of information are you going to get from the biopsy. Everything you do has its own risks and problems. If something is going to give you a biopsy that either no matter what you get as an answer from your biopsy, it's still going to go to surgery, then you're sort of wasting some time in going forward with a biopsy prior to surgery.
Right, great, thanks. And as I stated earlier, when we talk about thoracic surgery, it's not just the lung. There's many, many structures in the chest, of course, including the heart. But what the other organ system is the GI tract and the esophagus. And the reason that I'm sort of changing courses here, we actually do have a call from John in Brooklyn who has a question about surgery for what's called Barrett's esophagus. And just to explain that, so I don't have to have John, our caller, explain it, is an inflammatory process of the lower esophagus or the esophagus, which is the food pipe meets the stomach, and it's an inflammatory process. People who have, not everybody who has reflux gets Barrett's, but the thing with Barrett's is it can be pre-malignant, and it doesn't always imply cancer. So, John, welcome, and thank you for calling on this early Sunday morning. Your question for Dr. Speer.
Yes, we all know that the esophagus or the food pipe is a really thin, relatively thin structure. I think in the past, maybe diversion or reconnecting esophagus, there were very limited options. So can you comment about what you've been able to bring to Winthrop and also to the community? The other thing I tell a lot of people about the CAT's corner, and I can tell them whether or not they're men or women, the topics are very, very useful for everyone. So I'm happy to hear about your discussion about the esophagus also.
No, my pleasure. You know, dealing with Barrett's esophagus, which is basically a change in the cell structure in the distal esophagus, which is really related to gastroesophageal reflux, which is very common today in many people. And this change in the cell structure can ultimately lead to what we call dysplasia of the cells, which could be a precursor to esophageal cancer. But as you said, the esophagus is the connection between the back of your throat and what you eat, and the food passes down to your stomach. And resecting the esophagus is a difficult procedure. And I brought with me to Winthrop just an expertise in robotics, and all my esophageal work is done robotically. The benefit of the robot for esophageal work is because of the minimally invasive aspect of the procedure. Historically, for doing esophagectomies, which is the removal of the esophagus or an esophageal cancer or high-grade dysplasia of the esophagus, there were several different approaches. The three different approaches that most surgeons in the country use today is what's called a transhiatal esophagectomy, where you make an incision in the abdomen and free up the stomach to use as a new conduit in replacement of the esophagus. And that goes, the stomach gets brought up into the left neck after the esophagus is removed. The issue with taking out the esophagus is that you have a gap there between the back of your throat and your stomach, and something has to fill that gap for you to drink water and eat food. And the stomach is a perfect conduit for that, but it's a very long gap that you have to fill. And having a transhiatal esophagectomy has some risks that go with it and complications that go with it. Another type of procedure, which is what I perform for the most part, is called an Ivor-Lewis esophagectomy, and that's where I free up the stomach and the abdomen and then bring it into the right chest. And I look into the right chest, and I resect about half of the esophagus, and I do what's called an anastomosis of the stomach to the what's left of the esophagus in the left chest.
So there are options for Barrett's, and this would be a topic that would take us all day to cover. One of the concerns are, when do you operate for Barrett's, and when do you treat it medically, and that gastroenterologists follow with endoscopy. But I appreciate your question, and I hope we gave you some insight into the surgical treatment. And this leads me to where I wanted to go next with Dr. Spear, is what we call robotic surgery. And robotic, it sounds very sci-fi. And as robotics has been developed, there's been a lot of press, both in the medical press and the lay press, both good and some actually not so good. And having been at Winthrop in this field, like I said, for over 20 years, I've seen it evolve. And initially, there was some skepticism on my part. But Dr. Spear, who focuses on robotic surgery, not to make him blush here on the radio, but when you see a maestro, you know one. And so I'm going to throw out to Dr. Spear with any, whether it's the esophagus, the lung. Is it a gimmick, number one? Is it really better? And just what are your thoughts about it? Having watched you, I know the answers, but the people listening don't. So tell me something about, in general, robotic surgery, and then we can talk about specifically chest surgery.
Well, robotic surgery is something that's come a long way in the past couple of decades. The issue with surgery, certainly of the chest, is that there's ramifications for doing large incisions and cutting through muscles and spreading ribs and bones, and that it gives you a significant amount of pain and a increased recuperation to get back to where you were prior to the surgery. The benefit of the robot, obviously, it's a minimally invasive platform, meaning that you're making very small incisions, so you heal much quicker and you're back getting to do the things you want to do much quicker. There's also the aspect of what you can do. with the robot as opposed to an open procedure or another type of a minimally invasive platform, which is some people call VATS, V-A-T-S, which is video-assisted thoracic surgery. The benefit of the robot is that, the visualization is astronomically improved over VATS or even when you make an incision and you're looking in with your eyes because of the fact that you have 10 times magnification of everything you look at. Not only is it 10 times magnification, but also you're seeing in three dimensions just like you do when you're looking at something with your own eyes, as opposed to surgeons who are using what's called VATS and they're looking at a TV screen. Which is two-dimensional, which actually hinders you with a lot of the dissection that you're doing during your operation. So the aspects of visualization extremely important. Another is the instrumentation. The instrumentation have what we call 7 degrees of freedom. You're able to. It's almost as if you have your hands inside the chest, but you're only using 8 millimeter incisions on the patient's body. And also, when it comes to the chest surgery, pain is a significant issue because the chest surgery does hurt. And the way the robot works is that there's a focal point on the instrumentation, which means that they never put any pressure on the ribs when they pass through into the chest cavity. And we do know that the spreading of the ribs or pressure on the ribs increase pain significantly in the postoperative period.
Yeah, what I've noticed as this has evolved, first of all, this is no longer experimental, and I've done, again, lung surgery for many years, and it's been very effective in people who do well, but with a standard open operation, people are in the hospital, I'd say, a minimum of 4 days, depending on the size of the incision and the pain, they can be in a week, and they're uncomfortable, doesn't mean debilitating. And with the robotic procedures, people now can have the same operations we used to do, what we call open, and they're home in 2 days. And this is not rushing them home. They're ready to go home. Their whatever drainage tubes have been in are out, and their pain can be controlled with Tylenol or oral medication. And the limitations after surgery to protect the incision are not there. And it really has been a dramatic benefit. One of the concerns I've had from people, robotic surgery, that means the surgeon's not doing the surgery. Well, that's not true. Dr. Spear, can you tell us a little about what's happening? I mean, this is not really a robot. This is you doing the surgery, right?
Correct. Yeah, this is the surgeon is doing the operation. It's not a pre-programmed software application that does the procedure and you just sit on the side. The robot just mimics everything you're doing with your hands. You sit at a console with your hands that control the robot, and everything you do with your hands, the robot mimics. So it gives you the additional dexterity of the robot doing the procedure that you are actually doing. So it's actually like having your own hands inside the chest. But again, you can't have your hands inside the chest through an incision that's half an inch in size. So this gives you that ability.
One of the concerns is if I was a patient, this is something new. And when people say minimally invasive, it always sounds better. But one of the concerns commonly, we're operating for cancer. And my concern is, well, if someone does an open operation, they're going to get more of it out, or it's a better cancer operation, which we know is not true. But can you comment on that? Do you agree with that?
No, it's not a better operation just because you do an open incision. You know, there are various parts of the operation that you want to get done. First, you obviously... for lung cancer, you want to do what we call a cancer operation. If you have a lung cancer that's in, let's say, your right upper lobe in your right chest, you want to do a formal, what we call lobectomy, meaning taking out the lobe of the lung that the cancer is in. Not only is it imperative to do a formal operation, but you also want to clean out the lymph nodes, as we spoke earlier about staging. and you want to be able to get at least 10 lymph nodes out from several different stations, several of the 14 stations I told you about earlier on in the program. This is all important, and there are some surgeons that will do an open operation and not be able to get all those nodes out or not be able to do the formal lobectomy. With the robot, I do a complete operation, a complete lobectomy, complete lymph node dissection, which increases survival, and that's what this is all about, curing people.
And how do you know if someone says they're being referred to a surgeon and someone says, okay, I'm going to do this robotically, having watched you do it, and knowing how does the patient or family know that this is a person who knows what they're doing? This is not anybody can do this. Any comment on that?
Yeah, I mean, this is something that takes years to perfect. And while a lot of surgeons now are trying to do robotics and are learning, there are several different centers in the United States. There's 10 robotic epicenters in the country. These are designated by the robotic company. So of the 10 epicenters in the country, Winthrop now has one that I brought along with me. So we have observers from all over the country coming to watch how surgery on the robot and the chest is done. These are all surgeons from various different states that come and watch and learn the expertise that we've provided over at Winthrop Hospital.
So I hope where time is winding down, but at Winthrop, bringing Dr. Spear on, it helped enable us to provide really the full gamut of care for anybody with lung disease and specifically nodules of the lung. We began with the lung screening cancer program and assessing those people. And as you know, smokers can sometimes have lung function that's not where it should be, and it's assessing those patients. And there's been other guests on the shows from the divisions of oncology at Winthrop, pulmonology, and really the full care. And then you can imply is that not everybody can be treated with surgery and requires other therapy. Regarding the epicenter, which means a center of excellence, Winthrop has become one. And then before we end in the next 30 seconds, there's really exciting news with Winthrop in that we have become affiliated with NYU Langone Medical Center, which just increases the, I would say, the brain power of both institutions. And we're putting our qualities together, and it's really a synergistic, very exciting time at Winthrop. And I just, again, before we end, I wanted the Men's Health Seminar, June 17th, and we're about to end, and I want to thank Dr. Katz for allowing me to sit in for him. I want to thank Dr. Spear, and it's a beautiful day in New York City, and when I hosted last time, my final comment is just go out there, enjoy the day, and be kind to somebody, and you will feel much better. That alone is better than any medicine. And I want to wish you all well, and a good day.